I want to thank everybody very much for coming this morning. This is a shiur which has been in the making for a long time. In fact, I want to give credit where credit is due. There's been a lot of people who've been asking for the shiur. Murray Cohen's asked for the shiur for 2 years. Okay, Murray's on the way down, and Aryeh, Yossi, Terry, there have been many people who have been asking about this particular shiur, and we finally got to this shiur. This shiur has a lot of deep meaning. If you don't have copies of the sources, they are available on the screen itself. So in future, by the way, these are actually online. So if you go to thoughtsfor.com, which is one of the blogs that I work with, and you bring an iPad, you can actually see it on there. It's not so easy to read on the phone. But in future, if you're watching this shiur as well, I want to start off by thanking Hilary Storch, who is sponsoring today's shiur, Leila Nishmas Mendel Noach Ben Svi Hirsch, her father's Yotzat, whose Yotzat is on Gimel Adar, that'll be this Tuesday, this Wednesday. This is a very meaningful shiur, which has a lot of deeper. One second. Got it over there, Don. Thank you, Shrek. This particular shiur has a lot of background. You know, for us, Kaddish is something which has a resonance deep in many of our lives. Unfortunately, for those of us who have to say it, actually on a daily basis, we already say Kaddish a lot. And it pays to appreciate where it comes from. So what we're going to do is the following. We're going to do a two-part series. One part today is called Kaddish, the background, a little bit of context. Next week is Kaddish, the meaning. So we're going to actually go through it and appreciate the words, what it's achieving, what each paragraph is doing. Now, let's start just to appreciate this. You know, like Kaddish has been said, has accompanied us in the most deep of places, in the darkest of places throughout Jewish history. We were just like a short year ago, we were discussing Elie Wiesel's book, Night. There's a really beautiful passage. I didn't put into the sources, but there's a beautiful passage that he describes in this concentration camp that he's in Buma, as it's Rosh Hashanah night, and the tens of thousands of prisoners are standing together outside, and they're davening for Rosh Hashanah davening. And the description he says is, and he talks about how he's almost lost his ability to be able to thank or speak to our God. And he says the following: "But now I no longer pleaded for anything. I was no longer able to lament. On the contrary, I felt very strong. I was the accuser. God was the accused." And this is very strong language of Elie Wiesel at this point in time as he stands in Rosh Hashanah night, davening outside with tens of thousands of peoples. "My eyes had opened and I was alone, terribly alone in a world without God, without man, without love or mercy. I was nothing but ashes now. I felt myself to be stronger than this Almighty to whom my life had been bound for so long. In the midst of these men assembled for prayer, I felt like an observer, a stranger. The service ended with Kaddish. Each of us recited Kaddish for his parents, for his children, and for himself." Just think about the Kaddish in the concentration camps in 1940. This is end of 1944. Just appreciate the power of the depth of where this Kaddish has led us. And I just want to come back to his accusation a little bit later, as you go through this shiur, just to appreciate the depth of that accusation that he makes specifically as it comes to the reference with Kaddish and how we relate to that. You know, there's so many beautiful stories that we talk about when it comes to Kaddish. On the other side, you know, about the guy who arrives at 2 o'clock in the morning in Israel and he can't find a minion and he used to say Kaddish and he calls up 9 taxis and he puts them on meter so he can say Kaddish. You know, Ashrenu Matelch Olken, what a beautiful thing. There's a famous story which is on Chabad.org about Oprah Winfrey, a guy who gets to go to Oprah Winfrey, but he can only do it if he has a minion, and so she organizes a minion downtown Chicago with a Chabad, which is why it's on Chabad.org. And you know, like, and you know, there's, you know, the lengths that people go to say Kaddish is very, very, is quite incredible. What I want to do is the following, is like, if we look through Tanakh, if we look through the Gemara, there is no mention of Kaddish. If you look through Tanakh, there's no specific, explicit references to Kaddish. In fact, if you go through most of the Gemara and Mishnah, you're not going to find direct references to it. Doesn't mean to say it didn't exist, but it means to say that it existed in an idea rather than in a text. And we need to draw back to those ideas to appreciate what we're doing now and how it relates to our loved ones and our comforting today. So the if we take a look at actually the Kaddish itself, just for a quick moment on the top left there, Perhaps the greatest theme, without going into the meaning and the words right now, but what is the focus of all of the first three paragraphs? What is the one word which is in fact the focus of the first three paragraphs of Kaddish? All the verbs are moving towards one noun. That's a verb. Everything Hashem should be great. Something is being greatened. Something is being praised. Something is being elevated. What is that thing? Shmei Rabba, his name. Yiskadal v'yiskadash Shmei Rabba. Let his great name be increased. Yehei Shmei Rabba. Let his great name mevorach lo olam olomel mayah. Yisparav yishtavach yisparav yisramam yisnasei. Let all these descriptions of praise. V'yisalel, what? Shmei dekudosh abrichu. Do you notice that all through the first paragraphs, the item that we're trying to elevate is his name. Now, what does that mean? His name. Where in Tanakh do we talk about his name being deficient that we need to talk about filling it again? That's the place we need to start, right? We need to say, before we even look for the text of Kaddish, where do we talk about there being a hole in God's name? Happens to be
Amalek.
We just mentioned it a few weeks ago. If you take a look, let's jump straight in over here. Let's go to the first place that we talk about the lacking in God's name. It happens at the end of Parashas Beshalach, where the context is that Israel are attacked by this nation called Amalek, and they vanquish them somewhat. But at the end of that, Hashem makes a very painful statement. He says, he tells them to destroy them, to make sure to always remove this notion of Amalek. Vayomek yad al keis ka. Milchama la Hashem b'Amalek midor dor. That Hashem says that the hand of Amalek is on the throne of God, on his al keis ka. Now you'll notice that that's actually supposed to mean kisei Hashem, but it's missing. The word kisei is missing the last aleph, and the name of Hashem is missing the last two letters. Which means to say, the way that Chazal interpreted it is, the throne of Hashem is deficient, the name of Hashem is deficient. When Amalek exists in this world, there's a deficiency in the name of God while there's Amalek. Now, that sounds already very cerebral. That sounds very intellectual. Let's make it a little more real. Just to appreciate this. So a few years ago, I had the opportunity of going through the Chicago Holocaust Museum. Very interesting history as why that came into being. And in the exhibit, they have the Nazi propaganda section. And there's a magazine cover which has a picture of a physically handicapped young boy, and the caption on the bottom in German, as was translated, is it costs the state $40,000 to help this young man. Wouldn't your money be better spent elsewhere? The T4 program of the Nazis. And you see people talking about human life like that, and that was their program. And they got rid of people who had any deficiencies, any mental, physical, psychological handicaps, besides for the Jews. When you see an instance like that, when you see the famous picture of a mother holding her child above the grave which is dug as the Nazi raises the rifle to shoot her, you realize that at that point in time, when there is a notion of pure evil, of Amalek in the world, there is a deficiency of godliness in the world. When human beings can come to that, what the Torah is telling us is that God's name is not complete in the world. There's something missing. That's what the Pasuk is telling us over here. Just to appreciate that in full definition. What apparently we're trying to do over here is to bridge that gap. Just before we get anywhere, before we get to language. There's the name of God. God's expression in this world is deficient when there is evil in the world. Let's move a little on. Happens to me there's another time where God himself seems to lack presence. Where it's not a nation from the outside, but it's us ourselves who in fact decrease his name in the world. And that happens in Parashas Shlach. Parashas Shlach, where it talks about how Moshe Rabbeinu sends the spies into the land of Israel, they come back, and as opposed to this being the capstone moment of what Exodus was leading to, we talk about Exodus, revelation at Sinai, and what should have been next, should have been entry into the land of Israel, this would have been it, crowning glory of God at this point in time. And they say, not really, we're not quite sure, looking at the facts, looking at the military statistics, things don't look so grand, and they give this whole story. And in fact, this is the moment where we're moving towards that pinnacle, and we drop precipitously. At this point in time, Hashem says the most incredible statement, and here we start hearing Kaddish arriving. Here we are. It's in Bamidbar Perik Yudalad. Va'ata, and now, Says God, Yigdal na koyach. Oh, Moshe says, Yigdal na koyach Hashem, kasher dibarto leimor. Moshe says, let the strength of Hashem be greatened. Yigdal, of course, Yisgadal. Right, that's the beginning of Zohar Kaddish over here. That his strength in this world be elevated, be greatened. Because what's happened over here? Everybody's watching, everybody's waiting. So all the crowds are silent. The music stopped. The presenter's getting to the stage. And everybody leaves the stadium. That's what's happening over here. That's what's happening with the Meraglim. What a terrible moment in history. So that we have this notion where Yigdal no Koach Hashem, that the strength of Hashem be elevated. Notice, of course, that the word Koach is, of course, very uniquely chosen. Koach literally means strength, but what's the numerical value of strength? 28. Why is 28 a relevant number in Kaddish, just for a moment? Okay, so it's interesting, if you go back for Kaddish for just a second, and you count the central section of Kaddish, which is from the Yehoshmei Rabbah into the second paragraph. Let's count those words for just a second. And if you, here we go. Yehoshmei Rabbah Mevorach Le'olam Olamei Olmayo. Six words. Okay, six words is going to be very important for us in a moment. One second, there's actually seven, I apologize. It's parallel has six, okay? We're going to get that in a second, seven words. Yisporach, v'ishtabach, v'ispo'ar, v'isramah, v'isnasei, v'isadar, v'isaleh, v'isalal, shmei, t'kudusha, b'richu. Le'ela min kol b'rechoso, v'shiroso, t'shvuchoso, v'nechemoso, damiron, balmo, v'imru, balmo, is up to 28. Okay, so between Yehei, Shmei, Rabba, to the end of Ba'olma, is 28 words. Apparently, this text was structured around that original pasuk, where there's been a deficiency of God's presence in the world again, owing to our actions. So we need to strengthen, we need to bring back that gap. How do we bring back that gap? Apparently, the strength of Hashem is encapsulated in these 28 words. By the way, this is why, halachically speaking, you know when we add the extra le'ela when it comes to the Aseret Yemei Teshuva? So we have to change a part of the Kaddish. Do you notice that? When we used to add an extra word, you've now effectively upset the balance of that 28, which is why we actually change the nusach. When you say le'ela, we say mikol birchasa v'shirasa. We drop the min kol birchasa v'shirasa to make sure that those 28 words are remain intact. So even though we change the text, we don't affect that koyach, that 28 as well, which is fascinating over here. Just la. So this interesting notion. We have this, first of all, the notion of the deficiency of God's name when there's pure evil. We have this part where we let God down. And in response to that, Yigdal na koyach Hashem, Hashem, let's elevate you. But it goes a little further. We start seeing later on in texts, when we come to the apocalyptic literature, when we go to the end of Yechezkel over here, this most beautiful description, this is now describing the ultimate war of apocalypse, the war of Gog and Magog. Okay, so we're talking about the times where now there's going to be a moment in history where there's going to be this fight against good and evil that's going to take place in the land of Israel. The results are pretty devastating. The destruction that ensues is pretty heart-rending. But in the end of the day, in the smoke, in the destruction, emerges God in full expression. That's what happens at the end of this world. And how is that described? V'ayobayamahu, says Yechezkel. It'll be on that day, boy, Gogal Admas Yisrael. And this person called Gog is going to come on the land of Israel. And it describes how Hashem is going to break open mountains and destroy him. It sounds, unfortunately, very, very like a nuclear war. When you read through the war of Gog and Magog at the end of Yechezkel and Perek Lameches. At the end of the war, I'm going to spread into him in blood and pestilence. I'm going to destroy the enemy, says God. There's going to be raining fire at this point in time on the enemy. I'm going to destroy the hosts of their legions. I mean, we're talking about really, this is the apocalypse in full description. And this moment, v'iskadalti v'iskadishti, I will become great and sanctified. Says God, when I break through evil, when I break through 2,000 years of exile, and you're going to see my face, the face you're looking for all those 2,000 years and you couldn't see it. That's when, v'iskadalti v'iskadishti. And of course, how does that Kaddish start? Yiskadal v'yiskadash. God, we're waiting for what? That moment. Do you see what we're saying over here? Kaddish is almost the prayer waiting for that moment where God finally shows His face again in history. What do you notice about all these things? Onodati le'nei agoyim rabim. I'll be known by the nations. Even though he's seemingly been absent from all those people who detract us and kill us and chase us throughout all the histories, throughout all of history. So it's interesting over here that the appearances, we'll call it the very subtle notes or harmonies of Kaddish that we're hearing from Tanakh are all at moments of lowness, times of darkness, times where God isn't around. That's where we have this notion of Hashem's name trying to be great again, elevating the Koyach Hashem, Yigdal HaKoyach Hashem, Hiskadalta Hiskadishti. Isn't this fascinating? In all stages of his history, trying to rejuvenate what is lacking. Happens to be that that it is also talked about in Chazal. Now, how do you find this Chazal? This apparently is so important, this particular statement in Chazal, it is the first Agarat, it's the first metaphoric or descriptive passage in all of Shas. So you don't need to turn too far. You start in Brachos, Daf Beis and Aleph. Turn one page over, Gimel Amud Aleph in the middle of the page. Here we go. This is the first story. It's a story about an individual, Rabbi Yossi, who was once wanted to daven, but he wasn't able to because he was on a highway. So he turns off the highway into an old destroyed building because he feels he has a little bit of privacy over there. And as he emerges from that building, he meets Eliyahu Hanavi himself. And this is the conversation that ensues. There's a very fascinating halachic description about where and when you're supposed to daven. But after that description, we have a very fascinating conversation which ensues. V'omarti loy. So Eliyahu says, V'omarli, but b'ni makol shamata b'churvazu. So Eliyahu inquires of Rabbi Yossi, while you were there, you weren't supposed to be in an old building. But when you were there, what did you hear? What, did you hear anything being whispered? Did you hear any voices in the building? And he says a most remarkable description. Here we have it. He says, "V'amartilai," I said to him. Let me just get to catch it up. Yeah, "Shamati baskol." I heard a heavenly voice. So he heard some sort of heavenly emission, which said, "Mishinema and menahemes kiyonah v'ameris." That was humming like a dove. Now in Tanakh description, in Tanakh verbiage, usually when you talk about the Hashem's voice, it's usually sho'ag ka'aryeh. It's roaring like a lion. We're in a post-prophetic era where God's voice is this very gentle background of like a dove. You know, like this cuckooing of a dove in the background. You have to listen very carefully to be able to hear what God's really saying, just in terms of description over here. And he said the following. What is the voice saying? Oyle bonim shebavon esemech ravti es beisi v'saravti es echoli v'glisim lebein ha'umos. Woe to my children that I had to send them away. That's what God's saying. God's whispering in the quiet places in the world, I wish I hadn't have to send my children away from my table. So Eliyahu responded and said, you know what? It isn't just once a day that God says that. He says that three times a day where Hashem, so to speak, sits by himself and thinks to himself, I wish they hadn't done what they did to deserve exile. But not only this, when Israel comes to our shuls, to our Bate Medrash, and says, Yehei Shmei HaGadol Mevorach, which is already the inklings, already the starting, the Nusach of the middle of the Kaddish, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu Menaneh Roisho V'Omer, Hashem shakes his head and says, Ashrei HaMelech Shemekal Sinai So Bevei So Kach. Praiseworthy is a king who has his servants praising him such. Ma Li Eloi La'av Shehig La Es Bonav. Woe to the father who had to send his children away. V'Oi Lohem Labonim Shegolu Me'al Shulchan Aviyem. Woe to the children who had to be sent away from their father's house. And you see over here the transition between Melech, when Hashem was in his house, and we were in his house, and we could speak to him directly. And woe to the point of the fact that we don't have that anymore. And what's the hinge? What's the words which really make that turnover relevant to God? Is when we say Yeshua Rabbah, of course, three times a day, when we say it in the morning, in Shachris, in Mincha, and Maariv. What the Gemara is essentially doing over here, this conversation of Eliyahu, is really, just really filling in the color of what we saw in Tanakh already. Where does Kaddish emerge from? Where is Kaddish relevant? Kaddish is relevant at moments in history when God has to look at a gap, look at a void, look at a vacuum. And what is Kaddish doing? Kaddish is saying that, you know, God's name isn't here. The Jews are in Babylon at this point in time. The Jews aren't in their place that they should be. They're being chased from country to country. They're being exploited as a substrate in every society. There's nobody to defend them. There's nowhere they can run. And that's where the Kaddish comes in. Hashem says, you know, at those moments where I have to look and I have to see the pain of my children and I have to withhold myself because I decide this is going to be what Godless is going to be. We try to bridge that gap. And that this is our moment of connection again of Yehei Shmei HaGadol Mevorach, Yehei Shmei Rabbah Mevorach. In fact, Tosafot says over here, very fascinatingly, it isn't just let God's name be Mevorach, it's Yehei Shmei Rabbah, let God's name be great again. Let's say Hashem's name, that's the time when you can use greatness again, by the way, because there was a time that it was great. Let Hashem's name be great again, as it was, when now that there's a gap. And what you see over here, just fascinatingly enough, notice over here that when we look at these initial sources of Kaddish, notice that it isn't so much about specific people, right? We're not talking about an individual here, an individual there. We're talking about what? Collective. We're talking about the nation of Israel. We haven't yet talked about saying Kaddish for a loved one. We haven't talked about the Kaddish Yosem. We talked about Kaddish as an enterprise and what they're doing. But understanding this will allow us into the next step. So now, the most important question over here is that, as opposed to most of our davening, what language is Kaddish in? Just to appreciate this. It's in Aramaic, which is a little strange, right? I mean, to say, for the vast majority of our davening, barring a few disputed prayers like Berich Shemei, Yekum Purkan, there's a lot of very interesting debates surrounding Berich Shemei and its sources in the Zohar, but on the whole, we're talking Hebrew. So why is this particular prayer in Aramaic? Now, interestingly enough, it isn't fully in Aramaic. You know that sometimes when you hear Kaddish started and you hear somebody say Yiskadal, Yisgarash, and another person says Yiskadel, V'Yiskadesh, right? So who got it right or not? So the answer is, it depends. Are you talking about Hebrew or Aramaic? Aramaic and Hebrew are very similar. Their structure of language and verbiage is very similar. Yiskadal v'yiskadash is in Aramaic, and Yiskadel v'yiskadash is in Hebrew. Just happens to be the hitpael in each. Is used differently. Why would the first two words be in Hebrew as opposed to the rest of it? Because Tanakh talks about it. Because in Yechezkel, Yiskadal v'yiskadash is in Hebrew. So maybe when we're quoting those two words in Tanakh, maybe we should refer back to the Hebrew. That's what the Mishnah Berurah says. The minhag that I have, the minhag that many people have, is Yiskadal v'yiskadash. We should go after minhag for this one. But in general, the whole of Kaddish is in Aramaic, and there's a debate about the first two words, because the question is, are we quoting Tanakh directly, or are we quoting the idea of Tanakh? Which is where the Yiskadal v'yiskadash, debate enters. Now, let's go back to language. Why is it in Aramaic? So, of course, this is something which is very important to be discussed, which is why it's talked about early in Shas. So, on that Gemara we just learned, there happens to be a Tosas. So, in the Tosas Academy from Northern France are talking about this particular issue, and they have two very, very different explanations to this. Let's take a look and see if we have it over here. Here we go. Let's talk about the Aramaic. So, here's Tosas. We're gonna start in the middle of the Tosas, actually, over here. It says, Ma Sheheim Omrim. Tosas says, with that we say it, Ha'olam, Lakach Omrim Kaddish Beloshen Aramis. Why do we say it in Aramaic? He says, Lefi, Shetvilos Tvila Noe Beshevach Godol Hu, Alkei Niskan Beloshen Tirgum Shiloyavinu Hamalachim Viyu Miskanim Bonu. So why is it placed in Aramaic? Says Tosas, for a very simple reason on the top left, is because we want it to be that the angels don't understand it. Apparently, Aramaic is one of those languages which is even has a greater depth than even Hebrew, and is sometimes evoked as a bypassing agent to the angels. The angels don't have grasp on it. Most of our tefillos, when we're, let's say, for particularly in Chutz La'aretz, when we daven, our tefillos are taken by angels to God. So we want to bypass that. We want to short-circuit the system. So how do we do that? Aramaic is one of the times. We don't use it all the time. We short-circuit the system by using Aramaic. Apparently Aramaic has a way of getting even closer to Hashem, fascinatingly enough. And then Tosas does an about-face. Tosas turns 180 degrees and says there's another reason. And that is, in the second paragraph over here, he says, "Vezei eno nira." He says, "I don't think this is correct." Says Tosas, "Sharei kama tefilos yofa esem beloshon ivri." He says, "Look, we've got some really great tefilos in Hebrew as well." Ela nira kedamrina b'soif sota eno ola miskayem ela a sidra tekedusha vayeish mei rabba. The Gemara in Sota says that the whole world still exists because we say yeish mei rabba and Kedusha. By the way, that's why it's so important to make sure that nobody's talking and the focus is fully on specifically during these times. Debasar agarata, after learning. Debasar agarata, thank you. Shehayu regilin lamar kaddish achar adrosha, v'shomayu amei aratzos, v'lohayu mevinim kulam loshan hakodesh. Lokach tiknu b'loshan tirgum. Sheyakol mevinim shezeh hoya l'shonam. Because what would happen? They would have a public drasha in shul, and the public drasha would be given for everybody. The learned, the unlearned, the people who are really, you know, advanced track in Judaism, and those who are really at a beginner level. And after they would have a learning session, they would say Kaddish, which is we're going to discuss next week, the five different types of Kaddish. But in the end of the day, they would say a Kaddish, and we wanted everybody to understand, because this is the moment where everybody can actually have some sort of hook into Judaism. This is the moment where we can all come together and talk about Hashem. So they put it in what language? The language everybody understood, which is Aramaic, because they lived in Babylon. Right? The emergence of Kaddish as its form is in Babylon, so they're talking Aramaic. So what do you have over here? This is almost the opposite description. Why is Kaddish in Aramaic? Because it's for us. It's because it's what we'll call the lowest rung rather than the highest rung. Right, if you think about the way that the Torah Tosis is being describing it over here. I would say interestingly enough that history itself has really decided between these two Pirushim, because I don't know about you, but besides for Mel Gibson and a few others, nobody's speaking Aramaic. Right? I mean, I don't know about you, but that's not generally how I ask for my coffee. So, like, I don't know about... So, it apparently, even though it is no longer in Aramaic, we're still saying it. We're still saying, which seems to give an indicator that there's something else going on over here. Now, I want to pry that open. What does it mean? What does it mean that it's beyond the angels? Let's try to, like, dig that a little deeper over here. What does Tosis mean by that? It happens to be that to get to the depth of this, we need to go into a very fascinating story that occurs in Tanakh. So here's how it starts. I don't know about you, but I always used to wonder why it is that when we say Kriya Shema, we say Shema Yisrael Hashem Lekan Hashem Echad, and the next words we say are Baruch Shem Kavod Machzor Olamei. But you know, folks, if you open up Deuteronomy, where Shema Yisrael is said in Parashas Vayeschanan, you will notice that it goes Shema Yisrael Hashem Lekan Hashem Echad. There's a paragraph break, and then V'Ahavta. And then the next paragraph, which of the Kriya Shema. So what happened? Meaning, where do we have the right to start now inserting extra words? It's like, you know, like we're blogging in between, you know, we just want to add our subscript onto the Shema. Where do we have the right to do that? So the Gemara says a very fascinating story. The Gemara in Pesachim tells the following story. We're not going to read the exact word Gemara itself, but it is here in the sources. The Gemara says that it goes back to a time. The pasuk is the following: in the end of Yaakov's life, he's on his deathbed, and he calls in all his children, and he says the following in the next source: "Vayikra Yaakov al banav vayomer he'asu v'agid lachem es asher yikra eschem b'acharis hayamim." He says, "Boys, I want to tell you about the end of days. I want to tell you where the world's going, how it's going to get there. This is the moment now where you need to understand the bigger ideas of creation around you." So what happens? Yaakov calls everybody, and he's about to start, and then he starts giving them the brachas. And he starts telling them the brachas. Yehuda's got a very nice pshat that maybe the brachas are the end of the days. But it doesn't sound like he's talking about, you know, the big picture of all reality. He's talking about, you know, Reuven, this is what you need to do. Shimon and Levi, Yehuda, this is your tough kid, right? So meaning to say, it sounds like he didn't get there. So what happened? Why did Yaakov not tell them the big story and all the lottery numbers and everything? What happened? So Gemara says the following. Yaakov had his nevuah. He was about to tap in, and then he realized, and he was about to, and the nevuah disappeared from him. He wasn't able to access that anymore. And he was very concerned, because he realized, looking back, that when it came to previous generations, there were also his father, Yitzhak, had two children, Esav and Yaakov. His grandfather had a number of children, the B'nai Keturah, Yishmael, and Yitzhak. And not everybody was following in a particular way. And he said, he looked around at all his 12 boys, and I assume Dina must be here somewhere. And he's looking around at his children, and he says, maybe the reason why I can't tell you the end of days is because there's a problem in one of you. Maybe somebody over here is a closet disbeliever. Maybe somebody's not on the same page as us. So what does he do? He gets terribly upset. And his children see that he's upset, and they used to say to him, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. Shema Yisrael, Yisrael meaning, O Israel, Jacob. Listen, O Israel, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem is our God, Hashem Echad. Hashem is one, like he is to you, he is to one to us. And that's how they comfort him, that no. There must be another reason why your nevuah left you, but it's really, it's not because there's a problem in your children around your bed. And Yaakov is so relieved at this point in time that he says the following statement, Baruch Shem Kavod Malchus Olam Voed. That's when it was said. So why do we say Baruch Shem Kavod Malchus Olam Voed? Not because Moshe said it, because the tradition is that after Yaakov first heard the statement, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, in relief he responded, Baruch Shem Kavod Malchus Olam Voed. Baruch is the Shem Kavod, because, you know, by the way, now we're back to names. The name of God And the Kavod Malchus, or the honor of his Malchus, is always in the world because I managed to be able to have the Shivtei Kor, all these children, actually going in one tradition. And that was the original story, and that's why we say Baruch Shem Kavod Malchus Olam. Fascinating. Happens to be that this Gemara, which happens to be Psachim Nun Vav, is repeated in a different way in the Targum Yerushalmi or the Targum Yonazan Min Uziel. The Targum Yerushalmi says, on that same Pasuk, says the same description, and it has it all in Aramaic, V'kor avun Yaakov levinohi, V'amah lehoin iskanishu v'isni lehoin kitzah d'giniza razaya tamira. I'm going to tell you the end of days, I'm going to tell you all the secrets of everything, and then disappeared from him in the same way. And he didn't know what to do, and the end of the Midrash says, Avunon Yaakov v'amar lehoin. Avram said to his children, Avram avui, avui da'aba, kom minei pisul di Yishmael. Abraham, my grandfather, had children who weren't fitting, like Yishmael. V'kol b'nei Keturah, and the children of Keturah. V'Yitzhak Abba, kom minei pisul Esav achei. And Yitzhak, my father, had another child who wasn't in the fold, who was Esav. V'ana dechil, v'lo yehei b'neichon, gvar libei polig al achoi. L'meza l'miflach kodam tavon achrunayim. I didn't have any children who were serving other gods, like my poor father and grandfather. And what does he say? An yentre asarti shivtai de Yaakov kulon kachada. V'omrin, and they said, Shema Yisrael avunon Hashem lakein Hashem echad. An Yaakov avunon v'omar, yehei shmei rabam v'orach le'olmei olamim. What was Yaakov's response? Not Baruch Shem Kavod Malchus Olam Vo'ed. It was, yehei shmei rabam. Which is fascinating. If you think about that, Baruch Shem Kavod Malchus Olam is the Hebrew parallel of the centerpiece of Kaddish, which is Yehei Shmei Rabba. Of course, it's about the name. Baruch Shem Kavod Malchusai. It's about the kingship of God in this world. Now, why is it that we say it silently? Why do we always say Baruch Shem, except for on Yom Kippur? Why do we say Baruch Shem silently?
Because Moshe didn't say it.
So the Gemara says, because Moshe Rabbeinu didn't say it, so in deference to Moshe, we don't insert Yaakov's tradition in the face of Moshe's tradition. That's what the Gemara says. There are other sources which say the reason is because we can't talk about the world. We can't look around and say, wow, God's name is so great. Everything's working out just A-okay. It's rosy. You walk out and down and you say, oh, God must be here. There's moments you see Him. There's moments you see the expression of Him. But in the world that we live, it's very dark. It's very cloudy. How can we as human beings say, oh, Baruch Shem Kavod Malchus Olam Ved. God's name, His expression in this world is doing just fine. The angels would castigate us. What do? We say it silently in deference to the fact that the world is not okay. The world is fractured. There's a lot of work to be done. Which is why we say it also in Aramaic. Which means to say, what are we doing in Kaddish? Kaddish is essentially the reflection of the silent Baruch Shem Kavod Malchus Olam Vo'ed, which we're saying, to a world which is imperfect. With the hopes that that imperfect world will somehow reach restitution. Which is why we do it in Aramaic or silently. Only on one day when we're like angels do we have the access or even the audacity to be able to say Baruch Shem Kavod Malchus Olam Vo'ed in a way that's which is loud. So what is this? If we look at the Kaddish is looking at the gap between a terribly fractured reality and the reality we hope and wish for. That's where Kaddish arrives in our tradition. How does that relate to us? So, like, you know, I mean to say, in the end of the day, how does that relate to the Kaddish that we're all saying? Hang on the questions for just a moment. Happens to be there's a really terrifying description, which is appears in a very far and distant place in our literature in Meseches Kala Rabasi, which is one of the small Mesechtos which can be found at the end of one of the Sidra Nezikin, where it is found, and it tells a story which goes as follows. And for the sake of time, I'm just going to mention it outside. The story says is the following. It talks about Rabbi Akiva. So we talk about Rabbi Akiva is living at the time of, after the destruction of the Second Temple, he's living in the time of the round of the Hadrianic persecutions, about 100 Common Era. And he walks along and he finds an individual who is carrying a huge load of wood. And this individual is crying and really suffering under his burden. And he asks, what's going on over here? What, do you need help? Is there something I can do to alleviate the burden? And the man says, I need to tell you the truth is, actually I'm dead. I'm a dead person and I have to collect this wood every day. There's different versions of the story in different sources. But the general idea is that I have to collect this wood as punishment to be burnt with, as punishment for the life I lived. He says, oi, what did you do? And he talked about the type of, in different versions, one, he was a tax collector, used to go beyond the call of his duty and create suffering among people. Other ones where he abused his position, whether it be morally, whether it be licentiously, whether it be he used to kill people. He was a pretty bad guy. So, you know, we shouldn't feel too sorry for him. But Rabbi Akiva said to him, is there anything I could do to help you? Meaning, is there anything that could alleviate, you know, you left a pretty bad track record. The man says, I don't know, there's nothing I left behind. He says, do you have children? He said, well, my wife was pregnant when I died. So, and he told him the name of the city. So Rabbi Akiva, when this apparition disappeared, because the apparition was actually in terror, talks about how he's so scared that those who are in charge of him, when they find out that he's talking, will punish him. He's in a very scary place to be. And we're not talking about human taskmasters. So Rabbi Akiva goes and tries to find the city, which he talked about. He searches out this person. Everybody's already ostracized this lady and the family because of what they used to do to people. And he finds that she's pregnant. He waits for the child to be born. And he takes the child and he teaches the child. He teaches the child about Torah. And finally, at a certain point in time, the end of the Midrash says that he brings him to the base Midrash and teaches him how to say Baruch Hu and Kaddish. And he receives a dream from this individual that he was released from his suffering because that his child was able to say Kaddish for him. And that's the origins where the person, what we call the Kaddish Yosam, originates from. There's different versions of the story which are quoted in different places, but the message is the same, that somehow this child could be the release for this individual who no longer has access to this world. And the million-dollar question is, how does that work? Meaning to say, what is this? You know, at the end of the day, We know that it's Hayom La'asoyson L'machor L'kabel S'charam. That in this world, here's the world of action. There's the world of receiving. If you're not cashing in now, you ain't getting it. It's the model of Shabbos. The reason why Shabbos is so frequent is because it's a reminder that for 6 days you work, and if you did not put the challenge on before Shabbos, you're eating cold sandwiches. Right? That's how this world and the world afterwards works. If you don't prepare for Shabbos, there is no Shabbos. It's not going to be the same Shabbos. If you don't prepare for the next world, there ain't a way to get into it. So that's why we're here, and that's what we're trying to do. So how does it work? Is it sort of like, you know, it's the extra life, you know, the game over, and then, like, you know, you get the... How does that work? So there's a lot of discussion around surrounding how the Kaddish works over here. On the most basic level, we're going to just abbreviate the sources for a moment, just for the sake of our time. On the most basic level, there is a halacha, which is a very fascinating halacha, which is the Gemara in Kiddushin tells us that Kibbud Av Va'Em doesn't stop at death. Kibbud Av Va'Em does not stop at the end of life. Kibbud Av Va'Em continues even beyond death. And the Gemara gives examples. Examples is that when a person mentions their parents, certainly in the first 12 months, and people even after say Harini Kaparas Mishkavai, you know, that one's thinking about the atonement that they should be getting. One speaks of one's parents respectfully even after their death. And what some of the Mefarshim say on this Gemara is that yes, in fact, this Gemara is a source for the reason why we say Kaddish, because Kaddish is a form of Kibbud Av Va'Em that we do after death, when we're no longer able to do all the things that we could have and should have done necessarily in lifetime. It's a thing we're able to do after, specifically intensely in the first year, and then on an annual basis on the yard site as well. But that doesn't really explain to us. That explains to us from our side, right? Meaning that's why we should be doing it. But that doesn't explain on their side how it's releasing. Right, so what are the exact mechanics over here? So there is a lot of very interesting and fascinating literature on this. We're not going to cover all of it, but there is a debate as to how final death really is. Meaning, how final is the end in this world? And one side of the debate says, no, that's it. There's nothing you could do once you've finished. There's nothing you can do except for children. When it comes to children, what children do in this world afterwards are able to continue the legacy. Why? Because although the tree may no longer be, but the fruit are growing new saplings. Meaning the products, the byproducts of that life are still continuing. Why? Because the actions didn't end there. The impact they had are continuing to grow. And therefore, the handiwork of children specifically has an incredible impact on the continued elevation of that or that particular soul. This is what the Maharik says in a halachic. The Maharam Chalava answers, and he says, can people improve after death? And he says, really not, except for the help of children. That opinion we actually don't. That is not the generally accepted view. Our view is more that any time a person does, even not a child, does something in the merit of a person who's no longer here, it's as if that person is hooking into that action and is able to do the action vicariously through you. And certainly by the people, or the people that were impacted by that person. So if you think about it, let's say there's a Siyam Mishnayas, there's a Chesed project, there's Kaddish which is done. All these are actions where essentially what are you doing? You're saying that because this person was in our lives, what we're doing is we're going to increase the Kavod Shemayim in their merit, and because of them, this is happening. If it weren't for them, if they had never existed, this item, this description, this would never have gone on in the world because of them. And their impact, their legacy continues. And they soar through that, even if it's not children. That's the generally accepted practice. It is important to realize that there is this. Children obviously matter a whole lot when it comes to this. They really, even more than other people. But everybody who does something is being able to elevate that particular neshama. Now let's make the particular connection. How does the national Kaddish relate to the specific Kaddish? If you think about this. Meaning, okay, I could be doing Chesed projects all day long. I could be doing all kinds of wonderful things. Why Kaddish specifically? And perhaps the reason is because just as when you have Hashem is in the world, and He rules through history, and then there's a gap, and then there's Golos, and Hashem is no longer there, and the world's imperfect, and it's fractured, and it's not the way it's supposed to be. And what do we say to bridge that gap? We say, Hashem, we hope and we wish, and we want to act in a way which we're going to bridge that gap. Yesh Mei Rabbah. The same thing happens on a microcosm when a person disappears. Realize that every single human being is irreplaceable. There is no one. There is no one who can replace any human being. When a human being disappears, there is a gap, there's a void of godliness created in this world. The greatest ambassador, the greatest sign of God in the world is a human being doing the right thing. Why? Because the human being could have done elsewise. I remember just on a more general level, there was a movie called Sully, which just came out recently, about the landing on the Hudson River. And there's just this moment where all the teams, the fire department and the police department, and everybody comes together just to help other people. And you say, wow, Hashem, you know, when human beings do the right thing, that is the most heartwarming moment in the world. And when you're missing one person, there's something which is irreplaceable. What do? We say, Hashem, we recognize that there's now a gap in your system. Yahesh Mei Rabbah, it's not about death. It's about the lack of Hashem's name in this world that was expressed through this person. A walking, living, breathing person who was expressing you. That's what we're saying over here. That's why the people who are left behind are saying Yahesh, this Kaddish. They're evoking from the crowd the realization that we need to fill this gap. There's no way to fill it, but we're trying our best for that void, for that vacuum, to have some sort of greatness, that Hashem's name through this person is somehow reaching its restitution. You want to take one level further. I saw this is on the opposite side. Shelley Galambek actually gave me a beautiful book on Parsha called Lehisorer LeYom Chadash by Rav Yaakov Nagin, and he describes a very fascinating description. He talks about in Parsha's Beshalach the following: why is it Hashem had to split the Red Sea? So he quotes Rav Shlomo Kluger, who gives a very fascinating metaphor. He says there is a world-renowned artist who is, you know, people travel from across the world to see what this person produces. And one day he decides that what he's going to do is, as opposed to doing portraits or landscapes, he's going to draw a picture of the king's horse. So what he does is he goes about it, and you know, we talk about a canvas the size of a wall, and he with painstaking accuracy and lighting, for months and months he works on this, and finally he finishes this masterpiece. This is going to be what he's going to be remembered for. And he puts it up in the king's palace on the side, one of the side walls with the beautiful backgrounds. And to his dismay, everybody who walks in the palace keeps walking past his painting without giving it a second thought. And he's so distraught. This was supposed to be his magnum opus, and nobody else is noticing it. And so he consults with one of his friends, and he tells him how distraught he is after all this investment. Why is there nobody's noticing? And he says, the problem is, you know what it is? It looks too lifelike. What you need to do is, he says, slice the painting in half, down the center of the horse, and separate it 5 inches. So what does he do? He does that. He separates the painting 5 inches, and he puts it back on the wall. And now there's half a horse facing half a horse. And suddenly, the newspapers come in, Channel 2's interviewing, they're writing op-eds about this, and everybody notices this, and now it becomes a tourist attraction, the Louvre sauce calling up to put it next to the Mona Lisa. Everybody wants to have a part of this painting. Why? So sometimes you need to break reality to be able to appreciate the beauty of reality. Why did there need to be Kriyas Yam Suf? It's because people didn't appreciate that God was in that sea for all the millennia before it had to split. So he quotes that's only said at a funeral of a particular lady. I want to actually just quote actually who it is, just for the shame Amra. He quotes at the funeral of a woman called Ilana Blidstein, that Yonatan Billet said a very interesting Devar Torah on the Kaddish, and he said that that's what's going on in Kaddish. Sometimes our worlds rip, and it's at the time that we rip that we appreciate just how magnificent they were, and just how much is missing, when there's just that gap. And that's where the Kaddish comes in. Kaddish is saying, there's a gap in the world. Yeshmei Rabbo, let Hashem please try to fill that gap for us. Let us try to fill that gap. Let us fill those shoes that are missing, both on the side of the person and on the side of ourselves in appreciation. And hopefully we don't have to. Hopefully we don't have to see the gap to be able to say the Kaddish as well. It is very fascinating that not only is this a prayer to help the people who are no longer here, in terms of their din, in terms of their judgment, in a very Kabbalistic work, I'm going to close with this, in a very Kabbalistic work, we just did a lot of these sources outside, there is a description over here, which is by Rav Chaim Vital in the Shara Kavanos. Rav Chaim Vital was a primary student of the Ari HaKadosh, primary Lurianic Kabbalah is through the pen of Rav Chaim Vital, and he says the following, that which the Avelim say Kaddish, al misas avihem v'imam b'shana ahi, tov lo'amra afilu v'shabbos yom tov v'rosh chodesh. We still say Kaddish on Shabbos or yom tov and Rosh Chodesh like today. Why do you think you might not say Kaddish on Rosh Chodesh? On Shabbos? Because we know that there's no din for neshamos on Shabbos, Rosh Chodesh and Yom Tov. Which is why, by the way, there's a lot about the Motzi Shabbos, Tefillah on Motzi Shabbos, the first Maariv, why that's so important, is because that's the return of Neshamas to the judgment they need to be in. But on Shabbos and Yom Tov, you may think, well, we shouldn't say Kaddish because there's no judgment going on. He says, no. Lefi shetam hadavar hu kedei laha'alos nefesh ames, began eden atzmo mi madrega lemadrega. He says, it's not just about alleviating problems in the next world. It's about elevating to positive in the next world as well. And he says, don't think that this is simply about bringing back to neutral. This is about elevating to the places where the neshama could and should reach in a life which may have been just a little too short for them to get to themselves. How? By their legacy continuing. I'd like to just quote a story I heard in the name of Rabbi Rafi Butler said this a number of years ago when I was a rabbinic intern in Jamaica States. He said on a Shavuos night, it was such a powerful story. I actually called him a few years later to ask him who the person was he said it about, and he forgot the details of the story. So I just have the posterity of this story, and I just want to share this with you, how powerful this is. So the story is that it's Erev Yom Tov, and there's a particular Rav who lives in Queens, who is in New Jersey, and he's coming back across Staten Island, and he decides it's Erev Yom Tov, he wants to stop off at his father and mother, who are in one of the Beis HaKfaros, one of the Beis Almin, the cemeteries in Staten Island. So he stops off there, he goes and visits his parents, and as he's there, he notices there's a funeral procession passing him by just a few rows down. And he goes over, but he couldn't help but noticing, he counts the numbers, and he sees that there are only 9 men. And clearly this is not an observant funeral, you know, there's people there with out yarmulkes, nobody seems to be concerned that there's not enough. And he says, can I make the minyan? He says, yeah, for sure, go ahead. He makes the minyan. And at the end, you know, they lower the person in, and they all turn away. And he says, can I say Kaddish? I said, if you'd like to, with the greatest of pleasure. Clearly nobody's connected enough to say, to be concerned. And he says, Kaddish. And everybody disappears. He fills in the grave, because it's not the tradition outside of Orthodoxy to fill it in. He fills in the grave, he says Kaddish, and he goes home. And he's just so puzzled. Why was it that he was there at this point in time? He wants to find out a little more about this person. So he finds out the name of this person. No name does not ring a bell at all. And he starts doing a little research. He finds out this person lives in San Diego, used to live in San Diego. He has a plot here for some reason. Doesn't know anything about this. So he starts doing research. And he used to go to Neri Yisrael, the Yeshiva Neri Yisrael. He went there for high school and Yeshiva. And he calls up Rav Herman Neuberger, Rav Naftali Neuberger, and he says, do you know this name? He says, yes, you know, actually, as it happens, He was one of the donors, the older donors of Yishuv. He wasn't connected to Judaism anyway, but he felt for some reason, you know, that, you know, in the New World, that there should be some sort of connection, there should be some sort of Yeshiva. He says, you know, I've got to tell you, this story just happened to me, so I want, you know, can you tell me, is there anything that I should know about? He says, well, I'll tell you the strangest thing. He says, this was many, many, many years ago. What happened was the Neri Yisrael Mechina, the high school, was just newly established, and they were really on financially shaky grounds. And every child, as you know, is a full tuition, and we couldn't afford all the applicants who were coming to our school. So what I did was, and Rav Tana Neuberger was the fundraiser par excellence to establish a lot of the Neri Yisrael infrastructure as we have it today, and he would go around the country trying to beg so that he could get these children into a high school of such note. And they had four boys who they didn't have money for. And so he went around and he said, he went to this particular person and he said, I want to tell you something. He said, we have four boys. We don't have money. We'll suffer the loss for two of them if you take the loss of two of them. I mean, you pay for two of their tuition so they can just come to high school. We'll suffer the loss of the financial burden of that. So the man says, you know what? That's fine. I'll pay for two of them as high schools. He says, which boys? He said, well, he picked two names, and the one name he picked was yours. That was you. Years later, the boy who he put through high school was there to bury him and say Kaddish. Don't ever forget. Don't ever forget the power of the Kaddish. That's the power of the Kaddish. That, look what that man did. Look at the legacy he created. That was his child. And his child was there to say Kaddish when there was nobody else. When the real children weren't even saying Kaddish. That's the power of the Kaddish. Mezah Shem, next week we're going to continue and try to get into the words itself in appreciation of that.